All right, we ready? Okay, so it gives me great honor. You know what? I can't even say it gives me great honor. That doesn't even describe how I feel right now. You know, I just want to share that, you know, they say when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. Well, May 30th, 2013, this gentleman was at my first meeting. I asked him to be my first sponsor. His name is Jason B. Come on up.
All right, let me get this thing on so I get the people outside can hear over the music that's going to be playing pretty soon, if you know what I mean. It's supposed to be, I don't know, how do you wear this thing? Help me out. All right, let's do this. All right, this feels weird. This is all high tech at the 1600 club. All right, hey everyone, I'm Jason. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be clean and sober today by the grace of God and the program of Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sobriety date. It is August 23rd, 2005. I have a sponsor. His name is Robert Clark. I have a home group in spirit of the law. Because in letter of the law right now, I don't have a home group. But in spirit of the law, I have a home group, and it is the Junkyard Dogs in Santa Barbara. We meet every Wednesday night. It's not at Veterans Memorial right now, but it's at 7 o'clock. I think it's at New House 1, which is on Bath Street. So let's get some things straight right now. There's no cussing at this meeting. Hello, it's me. Does that sound familiar? Some of you guys get that joke, right? Yeah, that's right. I know. All right, so I grew up in Santa Barbara, California. I was born and raised there. Thanks, Sam. By the way, Sam, thanks for asking me to speak at this meeting. I've secretaried this meeting a couple times. I used to live in Santa Maria, like probably 4 or 5 years ago. I lived there for like 8 years. Sponsored a couple clowns from around here. One of them's here tonight. Just kidding. It was a nice time that I had here. I have a lot of fond memories of a lot of people I love that live here. And you know, I have to be honest with you today. I woke up really early this morning, and my kid had a soccer game in Thousand Oaks, and we drove there and. I tried to get back to Ojai where I live, and I got back to Ojai about 3:30. So it was a lot of traffic. It was a long day, and my kid played in the soccer game for about 10 minutes. And she didn't play too good today. So that was kind of rough, and I had kind of a heavy heart about that because she's been kind of struggling with that. She loves soccer, but, you know, she needs to up her game a little bit. And so we did that, and then I told Sam I was going to be here today, and now when I say I'm going to do something Alcoholics Anonymous, now I try to do it. And especially if it's inconvenient or hard, that means I got to do it even that much more. And so I got in my car and I came here, man. And, well, actually, before that, I stopped at Target because I needed to get some new clothes because of COVID and shit, you know. Sorry about that. I gained a little bit of weight, you know, so the nice clothes aren't fitting. I don't wear them all the time, you know, so I was kind of bummed out, but I got that, I hammered that out, and then got home, got dressed, got in my car, and, like, met up with my buddy Kevin, and we came over here together. And so let me start by saying this, man. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life that I never ever thought I could have. And that's a fact. That's the truth. I say that from the bottom of my heart. Everything that's good and decent in my life today is a direct result of something that I have done or learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a direct result of coming here and taking the actions that were requested by my sponsor, taking his suggestions. And about 60% of the time, I didn't want to do that. So when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I was like, first of all, I was terrified to come here. And let's talk a little bit about how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. So like I said, I was born and raised in Santa Barbara. My dad was a construction foreman kind of a tough guy, worked hard, played hard, probably liked to drink more than anybody that I ever met in my entire life. Like, if he did anything that was fun, it definitely included drinking. Because, like, in that guy's mind, there was no way of having fun without taking a drink. No way. So he always had a drink with him, a beer, whatever. And so one of the earliest memories I have of drinking, I didn't see my dad a lot, and that kind of messed me up as a kid. Because I loved my dad, I looked up to him, I wanted to spend time with him, but he didn't want to hang out with me, he didn't have any time for me. And so, like, that hurt me in a big way. I'm not afraid to say that. It didn't mess me up. Anyway, this one day, I was so excited because he told me, he's like, hey, you're not going to go to school tomorrow. You're going to come to work with me. And I was like, yeah, awesome. So I was like really happy, and I'm like thinking about what clothes I'm going to wear, like to this instruction site and stuff. And so my mom put together this outfit for me that was ridiculous. And like, needless to say, man, I was very unhappy with this. So my mom says, put this on, and so I put on this little striped shirt. I look like the little Dutch boy paint guy, some shit like that. And I got like blue shorts on, and then I got thongs on to go to a construction site. And I'm like, seriously, like, I have to wear this stuff, yeah. So I go there, and they're digging out this big giant septic tank at the job site. And my dad, everyone's drinking. It's like 6 in the morning. Everyone's drinking beer, right? Seems weird, but that's what's happening, you know? That's how these dudes roll. They just drank all day and worked. So they're pulling the septic tank out, and there's like this giant hole that's probably, I'm going to say like 30 feet deep, maybe 40 feet deep, and there's guys down in there doing stuff. And my dad goes, hey, Jason, come here. And I'm like, what? And he's all, you're going to get down in that hole. And I'm all, dude, look how I'm dressed. I'm not doing that at all. That's not going to happen. He's like, no, you're going in there. You're going in that hole. So I refuse to do it. He's drinking more. He keeps mad-dogging me, like looking over at me, all pissed off, you know? And so the whole day goes by. You know, I've got some food, and I'm sitting there, and they're still drinking, 4 o'clock. My dad rolls up in this dump truck where I'm sitting on this rock, and he pushes the door open and says, get in. So I get in the truck, and I notice he's got some tall boys in there. There's like 4 left. And so he opens one, takes a sip, and then goes bam, and then backhands me in the head. My head goes flying into the door, and my nose is like bleeding, and I'm bleeding all over my t-shirt. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, my dad's not supposed to do that to me. Again, like, I'm feeling bad, right? Why is my dad hitting me? And he goes, hey, it's cool. He opens another one of those tall boys and goes, if you could take a shot like that, you can drink this. And so I don't want to get hit again, so I'm like, okay. I'm drinking that, and I'm like, it doesn't taste that good. But like, and he leaves, and I'm sitting there, and I just keep drinking it, and then it starts to hit me. And what happens to me is my mind says, hey, it's not so bad. It didn't hurt that much. He didn't mean it. I'm feeling a little bit better. Hey, I like how this feels. I want more of this. And so from that point on, like, every function that I go to, or I go like into a friend's house or whatever, I want that. I want beer. I want alcohol. I'm looking for it. And like, if I can get it and steal it and drink it, I'm happy. That's what I want to do, because that's just golden. That makes me feel better. Because, like, my life at home sucks. So there's this other thing that's happening to me, too, like, as a little kid. I'm, like, you know, 6 or 7 years old, right? And I got this, like, really screwed up step-grandfather. And he likes to intimidate me and corner me in the bathroom and do fucked up stuff to me that men shouldn't do to other men, okay? I think you can put 2 and 2 together. Alright, so this dude's molesting me, and I don't really know how to deal with this. I'm kind of like in this two-story building, and when this happens, I'm thinking about jumping out the fucking window because I don't want this to happen anymore. You know what I mean? And I don't know. And he tells me he's gonna kill me. He puts a razor, a straight edge to my neck, tells me he's gonna kill me, cut my fucking head off. You know, needless to say, I'm uncomfortable. Okay, that's not shit that a little kid should be dealing with. But I am. That's my life. And so I'm angry now, and then I start to turn that anger inward. And I'm thinking, okay, this is happening to me because I'm bad. I'm a bad person. I deserve this somehow. I don't know how, but I'm turning this in on myself, and I'm thinking, well, I might as well just kill myself because I'm sick of this shit. This has got to stop. And so therefore, the little light's going on like, hey, man, there's a solution for this. How you feel right now. Remember that thing that you drink makes you feel better? You need to find that. You need to get more of that. That's so, therefore, I'm looking again. I'm looking, I'm finding, I'm drinking, I'm trying to get drunk, I'm trying to get out of right now. I don't know about pills, I don't know about drugs yet, okay? I don't know about that stuff. Although I've seen them, but I don't put the two and two together yet, right? And so I got two sisters, and I got this ugly secret, right, that if I tell somebody what's happening to me, I'm going to die. Or at least that's what I think. So that fuels my alcohol, my drinking for a long time. You know, I get into like junior high school. I start to experiment with marijuana. People are smoking weed. There's kind of another factor here too, like I need some love and some attention, and I'm not getting any in my house. I'm not none. And like so desperately I'm trying to find a male role model, somebody who's good to like show me how to be a good person, show me how to be a good dude, someone to invest in me and like tell me that I got some value in this world, but I can't find a guy like that, you know. My grandfather's in Folsom Prison in San Quentin. He's in San Quentin, first gets out, goes right into Folsom. So that's my grandpa, career criminal, bank robber. Then my uncle is in the biggest motorcycle club in the world. He's a shitty role model as well. My dad is a terrible role model. I can't find a man in my life that's doing good things. And like, I want to do good things, man, but I don't know how. And all the examples are like, you know, drinking's always around, then there's weed and other drugs going on, even though I'm kind of little and I don't really get that yet. So, you know, in junior high, I'm smoking a little weed. High school, the drinking accelerates a lot from junior high school to high school. And like, I'm just this lost dude, man, that's all kind of like effed up sexually. I don't know, like, whether or not, I don't know what's happening. You know, I like women, man, but like I don't know how to approach them, and they scare the shit out of me. You know, I'm afraid of like that interaction because I'm thinking like they're gonna know what's been happening to me, and they're gonna see right through me. They're gonna see I'm defective, and they're not gonna like me. So I'm scared. I'm totally intimidated by women, right? And so. So high school's interesting. All I really do in high school is drink. I do barely enough to get by in high school. I can't even, there's this other element to the women thing too, like all the dudes in high school, they got cars and I got a bicycle, okay? Like I got a big effing problem, you know what I mean? Like, probably not going to get too many girls to go out with me on my bicycle. Alright, so, like, that's just this non-existent thing that's not going on. And, in high school, I start to hang out with these really rich kids for some reason. I don't really even remember how I kind of had that happen. So I'm a poor kid hanging out with really rich kids. that got a lot of money and nice cars, and some of them have cocaine. And so I like to drink Corona and soda day, and they have refrigerators full of it, and they have cocaine. So I'm going to do both, you know what I mean? It's like another opportunity to get out of right now, right? So I'm like, all right, cool. I want to do that, and that's fun, man. And so I love cocaine. I'm having a blast. I'm having a really good time. I'm doing all this stuff and going to all these places I've never been to. I'm cruising around on like big boats in Santa Barbara, riding around in nice cars. But I mean, still all by myself. I'm still the dude with the bicycle, but my friends at least have some money, and I'm having some fun at least. You know, but see, like, I still got that problem, man, that stuff that happened to me. I'm like, I don't know how to deal with it. I don't want to talk about it. It's still that big secret, and I just push it down. Just keep pushing it down, man. You know? And like, for a long time, I kind of forgot about it. But then it started to creep in again in high school in my mind. Like, I started having these visions of it, and I'm like, is that just like my imagination, or what? Did that actually happen? And so in that time in high school, when I kind of started to rediscover that had happened, and I kind of confirmed that, I'm like, nah, hell no. I'm going to do something about this. And so I go to that dude's house, my step-grandfather, and I break in his pad, and he has a gun case with some ammunition, and I break in that shit, and I get a .38 special, and I load it. And I go outside in the backyard, and I just kind of sit there. I'm like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to kill this motherfucker right now. I'm going to kill him. And I'm getting ready to go do that. And out of nowhere, man, this voice comes and says, Jason, don't do it, man. You will waste your entire life. You'll spend the rest of your life in prison. It's not worth it. And I didn't do it, man. I couldn't do it. I didn't do it. And I battled with those emotions and all that stuff most of my life. Like, there's even times today where I go, I should have done that. But in reality, I'm glad I didn't, because I wouldn't have the life I have today if I would have done that. And so I'm so glad. That was an intervention. That was really the first time that I felt God intervene in my life and do something for me. And that's what I believe that voice was God telling me, don't do it, man. Don't do it. So kind of like me on my adventure of stupidity continues. I got like a real net, gnarly beater car that barely runs finally. Doesn't even have a gas cap. It's got like a rag in it. There's beer inside the car. There's like empty bottles. There's probably some cocaine in the dash box. You know, and at least I'm getting some dates at this point, because I got like some cocaine and some beer, and at least I got a car, right? So like, yeah, I got a few dates, you know, there's some girls interested in my jam, you know what I mean? Like, that's all good. Right? And so like, my new thing is, like, I got a Fiat, and so I'm all like into Italy, you know, and I'm gonna like move to Italy and shit, right? And like, I'm into motorcycles, I love motorcycles, right? And so, but see, the thing is, man, like, I'm always spending all my money on, like, I got a shitty job, too, you know, no doubt. I'm working on a, like, little burger stand and stuff. And like, I'm spending all my money on drinking and doing drugs. So, like, I don't really got much going on. I'm still kind of, like, living at home and stuff. And at this point, though, like, my relationship with alcohol is that I like it. It's still fun. But in the meantime, like, I'm kind of math happy, like, when I'm buzzed, but deep down inside, man, like, I don't want to let you get to know me, because then you're going to see what's up, you're going to see that shit that I'm stuffing down, you're going to know. So, like, if there's anybody, like, any friends or women that actually want to connect with me, I can't handle that shit, you know what I mean? It's like, whoa, hold on, this is only temporary. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get emotionally involved with people. I don't know how to do that. That's painful. It hurts. And so I'm holding a lot of stuff still, and I start to go out to bars, and I go to this bar that my old man goes to, and I see him, and we kind of start to drink together, and if I'm drunk and he's drunk, we can finally have a conversation about something, and it's like usually stupid bullshit about football or something like that. But we can talk and we can interact, and I don't hate him. But then when you take the alcohol away, I hate him, you know what I mean? Like, and so I'm a pretty emotionally messed up person. So fast forward, I'm going to this bar that my dad goes to. I think it's fun. I feel good. I like alcohol. I like to drink. I'm still doing cocaine. I like to drink vodka sometimes and take some Xanax, you know, like, and to me that's not wrong, like, it's all good. That's what could be wrong with that, you know, in my mind. Why wouldn't you? If you don't do it, you know, what the F is wrong with you? Don't you want to feel good too? You know? And like, that's totally normal stuff in my mind to me, you know? So I hit, you know, so this is funny, this is a great idea, right? So I'm 30 years old, and I'm sitting at the bar with my dad, and there's a waitress that works at this place, you know, and she's cute, she's kind of my jam, she's all pale and got like jet black hair and stuff, got a couple tattoos, and I'm like, hey dad, I got a good idea, I'm going to marry that chick right there. And so I start dating her, and then we go to Vegas and get married. And this seems like really cool, man. I'm super stoked. I'm 30. I'm getting married. I'm starting to become a success story, right, in my mind. But remember, man, I'm the guy that thinks drinking vodka and taking Xanax is okay, right? And now I'm starting to think that I'm really starting to become a success story. I'm getting married, right? Okay, which is obviously couldn't be further from the truth. So now I'm going to get to something that's really important. So I go, during this time, when I got married, it meant a couple of things to me. One thing it meant was, okay, I'm married now. Now I'm going to be loyal to this person that I'm with, which is something I had never done before. I have no idea how to do it, right? But I'm going to do it. And so I'm married to this woman for like around 7 years. We drink a lot together. We go to that same bar that we met at. Things are pretty good. We're operational. But then something happens. We start to go to this other bar where there's a lot of cocaine at this bar. And all of a sudden everything changes. I start to do a lot of it because I love it, man. Like, I stopped doing it for a while. But then when I started to go to this other bar, I was everywhere, and so I started to engage. So did she, and that changed everything. Next thing you know, I'm like in the bathroom with some chick, and that whole loyalty thing is over. And then that happens like two or three more times, and like, I don't even remember it. And other people are telling me about it, like, hey bro, did you know you were with that chick in the bathroom? And she's telling everybody this, and I'm like, nope. I'm like, dude, I don't even know I was here last night. So I'm starting to black out. I'm starting to do blackout drinking. And I'm kind of in denial about it, you know what I mean? And to me, again, it's like, well, dude, that's just how we roll, you know? You're at a party. That's what I do. Like, that's just the consequences of how I live my life, and it's cool. I accept it. You know, but I felt bad about cheating on her, you know what I mean? I felt like that was wrong. And so obviously that marriage disintegrates. And this is the crucial point for me, is this is when my drinking goes from like here to like here. So I get a divorce. We're not divorced, but we're not living together anymore. And here's the thing. So I got this inside problem that I'm telling you about that I'm stuffing down, right? You can't see it. But see, here's the problem. I'm trying to fix that inside problem with outside stuff. That's addiction. Okay? Addiction is, I'm gonna use this food to feel better. I'm gonna go out and gamble to feel better. I'm gonna use this cocaine to feel better. I'm gonna use this alcohol to feel better. I'm gonna use this sex to feel better. And like, at one point or another, I'm guilty of all that shit. Because I need to feel better, and not, I can't deal with the inside problem. I don't know how. I'm not capable of that. I got no tools. And so, anyway, when the drinking starts to escalate to that point, here's what happens. Is that, like in the big book references this, alcohol ceases to be a luxury, it becomes a necessity. So at one point in my apartment, I'm going like a couple of days of doing this, which turns into a couple of months, which is, okay, man, where did I park last night? What was I doing? Who was I with? I got to call my friends and find out. I got to go out and look for my car and see if I hit anybody, if there's any blood on it, and where it is, because I don't know. And how come I woke up with $2,000 in my pocket that I didn't have before? And so that happened once, but then what was consistent was the like, okay, that was really bad last night. That is unacceptable, that stuff. I can't do that. This that's how I roll stuff. That's bullshit. I can't do that anymore. So tomorrow, I'm not going to drink. And so I get off work and I come home, and so my favorite bar is downstairs. And I'm like, I'm not going to get loaded today. And then, you know, 5 o'clock rolls around, 7 o'clock, I'm downstairs getting loaded. And once I'm just going to have one. I'm just going to have three. Then the next morning, where's my car? Who was I with? What did I do? And that happened for months. And so, in this interim, I'm at this one bar where I used to go to with some of my buddies, and there's this little short dude that I knew from high school that I didn't particularly like. This guy named Fred. And so me and my buddies are drinking, and Fred's not drinking, and he's with us. And I'm like, what's this guy's problem? So I roll over to him, hey man, let me buy you a drink. Even though I don't particularly like the guy, I'm like, let me buy you a drink. And he's like, nah man, I don't drink. And I'm like, what? Why? And he's like, I don't drink. I'm like, alright. And I'm like, what's wrong with this guy? Why does he want to be in a bar hanging out with us when he doesn't drink? And then so a couple nights later he was there again, I tried again, and this time he said something really important to me. I said, let me buy you a drink, friend. He goes, no, man, I don't drink. I'm allergic to alcohol. And I'm like, what's that? What does that even mean, dude? How can you be allergic to alcohol? I've never heard of that, right? So I'm confused. But yet, at the same time, a little bit interested. What does that mean? So we start to rap a couple times when I'm in there, and he's like, yeah, man, like, I'm allergic to alcohol. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm like taking a couple steps back. Because my dad tells me what's up with Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Like, Alcoholics Anonymous is for losers, dude. Why would you want to go there? So he says to me, hey, man, if you ever find that you have a problem with alcohol, you should talk to me. So a couple months later, I saw him and I was all, hey man, would you mind coming over to my house and talking to me? And so he came over. And so I started asking him a barrage of questions, like, hey man, when you used to drink, did this happen to you? And he's all, yes. I'm all, did that happen to you? All the things I named off, like trying to find your car, calling your friends, see where you went. who you were with. Did you, like, have sex with anybody? Or go home with anybody, right? And he's all, yeah, I did all those things, man. And so I'm like, hey, thanks for coming by. Because like, I know how I'm living isn't working and it's not right, but I'm not ready to make a change, man. Like, I don't know how. I'm not prepared, you know. And so what ends up happening is this one night, again, just that same series of events, and I'm lying in my bed, man, and I can't move. And I've just been like on this bender. A couple of like all-nighters, slept for like 2 days, and just can't move, man. And so Fred gave me his number, you know, and told me to call him anytime. So I'm like, you know what? If I had a gun right now, I would stick it in my mouth and pull the trigger. And so I thought, well, I don't have a gun, so I guess I'll just call Fred. So I called him on the phone and I'm like, hey, dude, I'm really messed up, bro. I'm not doing good. I think I need help. And he goes, all right, man. He's all, all right, check it out. There's a meeting tonight at 7:30. I'll be at your house at 7 to pick you up. I'm like, okay. So about 4:30 rolls around. You gotta get up. Feel a little bit better. Bar's downstairs. And I'm like, I don't need to go to that meeting, man. I'm feeling better. You know? So I call him back. I'm like, hey, dude, it's cool. I'm not going to go to that meeting. It's all right. He's like, no, hold up. You stay there. Don't go out of your house. I'm going to be there at 7 to pick you up. So for some reason, man, I stayed in the house and waited for him. So he took me to this meeting. And it was like this big, giant, like, fancy speaker meeting, man. All this like nice food, all these pretty girls, all this like people dressed up. They call it like the Gucci meeting in Santa Barbara, right? And so I went there and I was like, whoa, well, this is pretty cool. All these people are pretending to be sober. This is awesome. I'm like, I could do this for a little while, right? And so like, you know, and there's a dude up there in a suit and a tie, right? And like a big old ring, and he's like up here doing what I'm doing right now. You know, I'm looking at him and I'm like, man, I'd never be that guy. Not ever. You know, I don't belong here. You know, it's cool. The girls are pretty. I'll have some of this food and some coffee now and I'll bounce and I'm never going to come back. Huh? And, you know, that didn't happen. I started to go to a few meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because Fred took me to that one. And, you know, I saw what you guys had. Some of you guys seemed genuinely happy. I realized, you know, that some of you guys actually were sober, which was cool. I mean, cool for you, right? And so this is kind of how it starts. Is I'm in the rooms and, you know, and I'm running into different friends. And I'm like, hey, man, let's go get a beer. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm not drinking right now. What does that sound like to you when I say I'm not drinking right now? What does that mean? Does that mean that maybe I'm thinking I'm going to drink again later on? So that's where I'm at. I'm not drinking right now. And so I went to meetings every day, got a sponsor, I started to work the steps, but I'm not drinking right now. And, you know, this girl comes along that likes to do cocaine and drink, and all of a sudden, I'm drinking right now. I'm drinking right now. And so that's kind of how that happens. I get my heart broken. It's a perfect excuse to drink more. Boom. I'm drinking, but so like here's the problem I got going on is I listened to it and I heard some things. I heard about the obsession of the mind, the allergy of the body, and the spiritual malady, right? And then I remember those things that they talked about in the book. You know, if you wonder whether you're an alcoholic or not, go out and try to control drinking. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm going to try that. I bet you I can do that for a long time. That book ain't even what's up. You know, so I'm all trying it. Fail every time. Fail. Fail. Oh, just get loaded again. Same cycle. Same thing starts happening again. Looking for my car. And I'm like, man, I thought it was going to be different this time. No, not different. Exactly the same. Exactly the same. And so, again, man, it was almost like a, it just like was that, like that whole cycle spinning around again, going full circle, and then it's like, hey, Fred, I want you, to go to a meeting. He's like,
hey, man, you already know where it is. Go over there.
And I'm like, so, you know, I'm like embarrassed. I'm like, oh, man, they're going to laugh at me, dude. I got loaded. Oh, I'm stupid, you know? And so, I go to the Lotto Club in Santa Barbara. I'm hanging out back there and, like, debating whether I'm going to go in the room and go to the meeting or I'm going to go get drunk, right? And behind me, I feel this pat on my shoulder, and this dude I'm kind of knew a little bit said, hey, Jason, what's up? And I'm all, hey, how's it going? And he's like, hey, are you all right? And he's like, I heard you went out. I'm like, yeah, I'm all, but I'm trying to go back in. And he's all, well, hey, so you want to go inside? And I'm all, yeah. He's all, well, I'm all, dude, I'm afraid. And he's all, come on, man, I'll walk in with you. And he walked me in, and I was like, and none of that stuff that was going on in my head was real, you know what I mean? Like, people were, hey, what's up, bro? Hugs. You know, I got all kinds of love, and, like, it was cool, man. And, like, and my friends told me, they're like, hey, check it out, man. Remember the things you learned here? Because, like, in that time that I, like, when I had 90 days, I went to the Junkyard Dogs for the first time, and like, I heard some things, and this is what, like, man, what I heard at first, I didn't like. I didn't like it at all. Because here's what they said, man. I went in there and I went, hey, sit down. Shut the fuck up and listen. And I was all, don't cuss at me. Like in my head, but I'm all, don't cuss at me. That's offensive. You know? But, like, man, I needed to hear that. You know what I mean? Because if they didn't say the F word, I wouldn't have heard it. Like, I did. I needed to shut up. Because, like, left to my own devices, man, I was dying. I was dying, dude. And, like, so they told me that. And so when I saw some people at the meeting, they said, hey, man, sit down, shut up, and listen. Get a sponsor. Start working the steps. So that's what I did. I sat down. I listened. And so anyway, man, like, there's this, okay, so there's this dude, this old cholo dude named Andy. And so I wanted Andy to be my sponsor because, like, years ago when I was a kid, Andy used to be wasted rolling around in the bushes of my neighborhood, riding bicycles with TVs on his shoulder. And I see that guy all drunk, man, and, like, I see him now, and he's, like, a regular, normal dude in AA, right? And I'm like, whoa, hold on. I was like, if that guy could get sober, I could get sober too, right? Because that dude's way worse than me. And so I'm thinking, all right, like, wow, he's here, he's sober. I'm going to ask him to sponsor me, right? And so I come up to him, hey, Andy, hey, man, like, I got to ask you something. You think you'd sponsor me? He's all, just looks to me, he's all. Well, wait, hold on, man. Like, I thought people were supposed to be cool when you asked them to sponsor you, and, like, this guy just walks out on me, man. You know, it's all, alright, you know, F that. So I go to the same meeting the next day, and he's there. And so it was almost like, again, that same cycle where, alright, meeting's over, where's Andy? Cruise over, hey, Andy, will you sponsor me? This time I followed him up, well, hey! I'm all, what's up, dude? Are you going to sponsor me or what? And then he's all, hey, man, you got an attitude problem, man. And so he's all, here's my number. Call me tomorrow. And so I call him the next day. And so, like, another reason that I asked Andy to sponsor me was because dude had been in prison, and I'm a little scared of this dude, right? And so I figure, if I'm scared of homeboy, then I'm going to do what he says. Because that's important to me, because I know I want to bail out all the time, but I'm going to have a hard time saying no to this dude, so that's what I need. He might kick my ass around a little bit and make me get to work. And so that's pretty much what happened. So I started working with that dude, and he moved me with me in this like little teeny tiny garage, and we started working the steps together. And it was cool, man. I remember going over there. We're in this like little tiny like closet, sitting on like little 5 gallon barrels, like going through the book, and he's like, "Hey, man, yo, we want to get sober fast, eh?" You know, so like, man, I just did a lot of work with them, and it was cool. I got through the steps. I had commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a host of friends. So one of the things they told me was stay away from women. That was a little bit of a problem for me. But they said, "Hey, man, seriously, if you want to stay sober, stay away from women." And I'm like, "Why? The book says you're not the arbiter of my sex conduct." And they're like, "No, seriously, experientially, I'm telling you, stay away from women, because if you don't, you and her potentially are putting yourselves at risk to get loaded. Work the steps, and then we can talk about you actually dating somebody." And so I'm like, "All right." So I committed to that, and I did that. And there was this one girl in Alcoholics Anonymous that I really wanted to go out with. And so I'm like probably, I'm on like step 10. I got like 10 months sober. Yeah. And I start talking about her to a couple of my friends, and they're all, "Bro, stay the fuck away from her." And so I did. I listened. And Andy told me the same thing, you know. And so I got probably about 11 months. I worked the 12 step. And so I said, "Okay, can I go out with her now?" And they're like, "Nah, bro, still not a year." So I waited for a whole year, and I found out that she had gone through the steps. And then so I went to this meeting where I knew she went to, and I talked to her a little bit. We started to chop it up. After I kind of got to know her a little bit, I asked her to go out on a date with me. And so... And they're like, "Okay, so Jason, do you know what a date is?" I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like, no, dude. A date is not like the date you used to go on. This is a new thing called actual dating, right? Where you ask her out, you respectfully show up, you dress nice, you go, you take her out somewhere, you have a conversation, you talk, you have fun. You hang out together, and then like she goes to her house and you go to your house. And I'm like, "That doesn't sound very fun, right?" But that's pretty much how that whole thing commenced. And that, you know, that's what I learned. And you know, the men and the women in Alcoholics Anonymous taught me like how to go out respectfully with somebody, right? And so we started to date regularly, and then we like moved in together, and I proposed and we got married. And I went and asked her dad for her hand in marriage and all that stuff, and we had like our actual wedding, not like going to Las Vegas, right? Like a real wedding. We got married here in Santa Maria, just like not far from here, over at United Methodist over there. And like the rest is kind of history, man. Like, It's been like an amazing life that I have, and I've had some like brilliant and amazing experiences like because of the things that happened here in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. And so we get married, we buy a house, like just so like boom, all these like blessed things just happen right back to back, right? And I'm not trying to say it goes that way for everybody, but it went that way for me. And so my wife's like, "I really want to have a baby. I'm 36 years old." And I'm like, "Oh, shit." I'm like, "Wow, I really don't want to have a baby. I'm, you know, 30, I'm 40 years old, right? You know, I really don't want to have a baby." And she's like, "Why?" And I'm like, "Because I'm scared. Like, I had a shitty dad. I'm afraid I'm not going to know how to be a dad. My biggest fear is I'm going to be a terrible father. I'm going to fail." And so at this point I have a different sponsor, this guy Jim, and he's been a dad. And so I talked with him about it, and he's like, "Man, come on, dude." He's like, you know, he's like, "Look, dude, like Alcoholics Anonymous is not just about like stopping drinking and stopping using. It's about growing as a human being. It's about working hard to become a better person, a better man, and like take on new responsibilities and new challenges, right? And I'm like, it is? Because I'm scared, you know, I'm scared, man. All I can think about is kids fail, kids fail, kids fail. And he's like, no, man, come on. He's like, there's a lot of dudes in here that have kids. You know, I'll walk you through this, and they'll help you. We'll help you. We'll walk you through this. And I'm like, no way, man. You know, and so, like, I got to pray. I got to meditate on this. And, like, you know, I got right with God, and, like, I was like, let's do this, you know. I've proven that I could stay sober for a while. Let's do this. And so I went, we tried to get pregnant. It didn't work. We had to go do the whole, like, petri dish thing and all that, like in vitro and all that. And, like, that was super scary. I didn't like that. That made me really uncomfortable. Like, I'm having the baby, right? No, but really, like, it did, you know? Like, I don't like doctors, man. I don't trust anybody, you know? I got trust issues. You know, I'm all, they're going to take my stuff and put it at some crime scene, and I'll be, like, it's for the rest of my life. You know? That's how my mind works, you know? But anyway, so we have a baby, and, like, it's amazing, man. Like, I'm a dad, and, like, I'm so happy, and, like, and she's just, like, the most beautiful thing ever, man. Like, and you know, how does a guy like me get to have something that's so joyful and so, like, valuable and amazing? You know, all I did was came to Alcoholics Anonymous and did the steps, man, and tried to help some other people, you know. And, like, I didn't mention that once I worked the steps, like, there was something very important that happened in like, my line of sobriety. All the guys that I were around, they basically, I was like, yeah, I'm done with the steps. And they're like, oh, good, now you get to sponsor people. And I'm like, oh, no. Well, I'm afraid of that, too, you know. I'm going to mess that up, you know. Fail, you know. But, like, you know, I learned the book, and, like, I started sponsoring guys. And, like, that's been one of the biggest joys of my sobriety is working with other guys. You know, taking them through the steps, sharing what was so freely given to me, man, you know, and so, like, I've lived a really, really blessed life, and you know, do I see AA in life now at, like, being 15 years sober the same that I did when I was 1 and 2 years sober? No, not at all, man. Not at all. I see myself differently, and I see other people differently. And, like, one of the things that I've learned now is God speaks through other people. And it's really interesting, some of the things that have happened, and, like, some of the people that have been put in my life based on just being here and doing the right thing. It's so funny, like, on the way here with Kevin, we're driving down Main and or Broadway, and I'm thinking, whoa, what's up? I haven't really seen or heard anything about Matt, right? And then Matt walks up right outside. Like, I'll think about somebody, and then there they are right in my face at a coffee shop, or I get a phone call from them or something. And it's like just God putting people in my life that, like, I got to talk to for some reason. Or, like, maybe I got something to share with them. Maybe they got something to share with me that I got to know. So it's like God doing for me what I can't do for myself, man. And when I ran into Stan those years ago at that meeting, that's exactly what that was. And it's very interesting that day in particular, I'm sitting in my house. I got, like, a week off. I'm on vacation. It's like a Wednesday or something. And there's this meeting at noon at the Lana Club. And I'm like, it's like about 11. And I'm like, what's up? Like, why does the meeting at 11 keep coming up in my head? I don't want to go. Why is it like something's pulling on me? Like, dude, you got to go to that meeting. And I'm like, I'm fighting it full on. I'm not going. You know, I'm like, not going. And then, like 11:45 comes around, dude, and I got my clothes on. I'm going. I got another meeting. And like, I don't even know why, but I gotta go, right? And I go, and I see Stan, and then right then I'm all, now I know why I'm supposed to be here. Whoa. And I hadn't seen Stan in years. It'd been a couple of years, at least. So like, that's the kind of stuff that goes on, man, in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, I kind of want to talk about one of the things that I really struggle with in AA. And it was step 11. And I remember getting there for the first time. And I'm talking to my sponsor about it, and I'm like, dude, okay, I get the praying thing, you know. And so, like, to talk just a little bit about God, right? Like, you know, some of you guys probably love the baby Jesus or whatever. That's all cool. Like, I'm good with that. You know, you may like the Buddha. You may be into the Quran or whatever, man. Like, but in here, man, no one cares about, or you shouldn't care about what other people's God is, man. You should just care about that they got one and are praying to it, and they have a connection with a higher power. And for me, that's all I care about. I don't care about your God. I care. I want you to have one. And if I can help you, if you want to borrow mine for a little bit, cool. But I just want you to have one because I want you to have success in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, and like, dude, my God is not something that you've heard of. Okay, it's something that's just mine. I don't talk about it a lot. It's personal. And like, that's cool. But for me, I'm telling my sponsor, I'm all, okay, dude, I'm on step 11, and I'm praying to my God, I'm doing that, but like this meditation thing, dude, I can't do it. There's like a drum set going on in my head all the time, dude, like I can't like relax. I can't like get still. And then also I have this weird vision or relationship mentally with meditation. Like, I connect meditation mentally at this time. I'm connecting meditation with yoga somehow, right? I'm seeing, like, a connection. And so when I think of meditation, I think of these dudes all, like, in yellow lycra, you know? And I'm like, oh, dude, what? Like, that's messed up. Like, you know, and I'm all, no. Like, no, I'm not doing that. You know, doing, like, some weird-ass poses all, like, super yoga, like I'm fitting in a box and shit, right? And I'm just like, no, bro, I'm not doing that. And I'm telling the guy who's laughing, like, even some of you guys are, you know, and he's all, dude, it's not like that, man. And so anyway, there's this guy that happens to be in AA, this guy named Noah Levine, and he wrote a couple of books. And one of his first book was this book called Dharmapunk, and it was about his journey trying to get sober. And his dad was like a really spiritual dude that wrote a lot of books, and he was super into meditation, his dad was. And so finally when he got sober, he got into meditating, got super into it. And like, he wrote about it in his book, and it was kind of like this mix of like being into punk rock and meditation and all this like stuff that I thought, skateboarding and motorcycles, and I was like, whoa, like, okay, like I can identify with it, that's cool. You know, and so I saw him speak a couple of times, and like I went and sat and meditated at his place, and like I got into it, and I was like, okay, like it doesn't have to be affiliated with the liker dude fitting in a box. Like, he could be like a cool guy and meditate. And so like that's what got me into it, and I got into meditation, and I was able to like get through that step, and like, but like meditating allowed me to get peace of mind, which is something that's super important. Like, it calmed that drum set down, man. I wasn't hearing that and all that static. And, like, I wasn't faced with, like, all this, like, bad stuff that had happened to me in the past. It's, like, just kind of, like, goes away and mellows out. And, like, so anyway, man, I want to talk to you about, I got a little bit of time. So another reason that I love Alcoholics Anonymous, one, so there used to be the Alana Club, and it was at this like big Quonset Hut place back down here on the other, not the best part of town. I can't remember the street, probably Billy or some of these dudes know where it used to be. But so I moved to Santa Maria, and I started to go to this Alana Club. And when I was there, I started a secretary assignment at that meeting. And I got this dude to speak from a town, L.A. somewhere. And he came and shared it. And this dude had been through the same experience I had with my step-grandfather, right? And so he talked about it, and he talked about being able, that he had the ability to go, he got some money, and he was able to go to this place called Life Healing Center that was in New Mexico to deal with the trauma that he had suffered, and that he had recovered from that. And I remember hearing him talk about it, man, and I was like, oh my God, man, like, because the thing is, like, I'm sober, but dude, still, like, I've dealt with the drinking and the using and the spiritual malady and, like, all that stuff, the obsession, the mind allergy, the body, like, I'm doing all the stuff in AA to, like, stay sober, but, like, I haven't dealt with that beast that's in there, dude. It's still there, right? And it's like eating me on the inside still. And I'm hearing him talk about this Life Healing Center, and I'm like, oh my God, man, I'm like, I want to go do that at some point, but I don't know if I'll ever have the money. And so, anyway, I'm going through this time where that starts to come up for me again, and I'm really battling. And it's not like really threatening my sobriety, but it's really making me feel uncomfortable. And I'm really struggling emotionally, and I'm having all this anxiety and depression going on, and I'm sober, and I'm like doing everything that I'm supposed to do, but like I got this trauma and I haven't dealt with it, and it's starting to mess me up. And so I'm talking to my wife, and my wife starts trying to get me some help, get me some financing, and my wife hustled and gets me into Life Healing Center, the place that this dude went. And I was like, oh my God, no way. I'm like, so I was working with Kevin at the time, and Kevin drove me to the airport, and I went to Life Healing Center for a month, man. And like, I worked on myself, and like, I took all that wreckage and like all this like artwork we had done on it, and like all these like sculptures that we had done on it, and we took it at the very end and like burned it all up in a big giant fire, and it was awesome. And like, I mean, I'm not going to say that I 100% I never think about it. I still do, but it's nothing like what it used to be. Like, I don't know if it ever totally goes away, but like, I don't think about it all the time like I did. It doesn't control me. And so, like, that was a beautiful thing to learn, that I could get some help for that, man. Like, there was a way to do that. And like, it was expensive, but it was totally worth it. And so, like, if I could wrap this up, man, in like a few sentences, like, not that I might keep talking a little bit, but like, what I really want you to hear today or tonight is that I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and it saved my life. And I want you to know that it could save yours too. There's a new design for living that works, even when things get tough. And it was difficult. And Andy was the first, also, I didn't say this about Andy, but Andy, another reason I asked him to sponsor me, he was the first man in Alcoholics Anonymous that I saw get up at the podium and talk about being molested by somebody. And to me, like, that was like a freaking revolutionary act. I was like, that's like the guffiest thing I've ever seen a dude do. And so it led me to believe that it was okay if I at some point felt comfortable to do it. It encouraged me to do it, because when I talked to him about it, he said, hey man, like, I do that because there might be somebody out there that had that happen to them, and they're holding it and they're not going to say anything. And he's like, maybe my words will allow them to talk about what happened to them. And so that's what I'm hoping, is if you're like me, don't be afraid to talk about it. Don't be afraid to ask for help. If that happened to you, it's not your fault. It has nothing to do with you. So, what I've learned too over the years is that I've always wanted to be somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous that was a man of action, and I know, and I've been that. There's words in here, and words are cool. words sometimes are symbolic of intention, and sometimes they're not. Words are, like I said, words are cool, but words are not actions. Saying it ain't doing. It's not about what I say in here that matters, it's about what I do. And I learned that right away. They told me that. And so they're like, you know, hey, do you want to be a talker or do you want to be a doer? If you want to stay sober, you better be a doer. And so that's what I've been doing in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. And sometimes vigorously, sometimes not so vigorously. You know, I've been at it full bore, taking on a lot of different commitments. And then there's been times when I haven't taken on a lot, or maybe I'm not sponsoring as many guys. But the other thing they taught me to do was sit, you know, suit up and show up. And I remember one time, I was part of the convention committee here, and somebody had asked me to be the co-chair, which meant I was going to be the chairperson the next year. And so I got nominated to do that, and I said, hey, I'm not going to say yes because I got to talk to my sponsor. And I was like, oh, shit, I don't want to do that. Yeah. And so I got him on the phone, well, dude, I got nominated as the co-chair. I really don't want to do it. And he's all, guess what? You're doing it. And like, so it's, you know, it's taught me that there's things that I thought I couldn't do that I can do, that I'm capable of doing things, you know? And that service has helped me, AA, and so many other people, you know? By helping out here, I help other people. And the other thing is, too, man, like, there's something in AA for everyone, okay? Like, you don't have to be the chairperson of the convention. You know, you can pick up cigarette butts, you can clean up. There's something for everybody here to do, to participate on any level. But yeah, man, so again, like, thanks Stan, thanks Kevin for being with me tonight, letting me stop by the house, and anybody that showed up to hear me talk, man, I got a lot of love for you guys, for all of you guys, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous, love you, man, thanks.
Yeah.
All right, let's give it up for Jason one more time.